Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2017 second quarter results conference call. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du second trimestre de l'exercice 2017 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the financial review for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO, and Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer. I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning. For the three-month period ending June 30, production was 92% of the long-term average, due mainly to post-commissioning activities at Upper Leduc River, Boulder Creek in British Columbia, Mesquite Hugues-Jussum in province of Quebec, and below-average wind regimes in the province of Quebec and in France. Overall production increased 12% compared to Q2 2016, due mainly to the contribution of the recently commissioned facilities, namely the Mesquite Hugues-Jussum, the Upper Leduc, the Boulder Creek, and the Big Silver facilities, and to the 13 wind facilities located in France and acquired in 2016 and 2017. Revenues for the quarter were 21.7 million higher than in 2016. This 25% increase is attributable mainly to the contribution of the recently commissioned projects and the acquisitions in France, which was partly offset by lower production at our hydro facilities in British Columbia, which we need to remember in 2016 were well above average, and at our Quebec wind farms. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was 19.1 million higher compared to Q2 2016 due to the increase in revenues explained before, but partly offset by higher operating expenses due to the higher number of facilities. Finance costs were 14.5 million higher, and depreciation and amortization were higher also by 9.8 million. The increases are due mainly to the new facilities described before. The below-average production this quarter compared to an above-average production last year explained the decrease in net earnings as opposed to the increase in revenues. For the six-month period ending June 30, production was 91% of the long-term average, due mainly to post-commissioning activities at, again, Upper Leduc, Boulder Creek, Mesquite Hugues-Jussum, and also because of below-average wind regimes in Quebec and France. The overall production increased 11% compared to 2016 due to the commission of the recently commissioned facilities and the 13 wind farm facilities acquired in France. Revenues for the six months were 33.8 million higher than in 2016. This 22% increase comes from the commission of the commissioned projects and the acquisition in France, partly offset by lower production at our hydro facilities in British Columbia and the Quebec wind farms. Adjusted EBITDA since the beginning of the year was 22 million higher compared to 2016 due to the increase in revenues, partly offset by higher operating expense due to the higher number of facilities and operations. Finance costs were 24 million higher, and depreciation and amortization were higher by 20 million. Again, the increase are due to the higher number of facilities. The below-average production since the beginning of the year compared to an above-average production last year explains the decrease in net earnings as opposed to the increase in revenues. Our trailing 12-month free cash flows ending on June 30 reached $75.9 million compared to $78.9 million for the cumulative period last year. Our payout ratio stood at 93% compared to 84% last year. The decrease in free cash flow is mainly due to the below-average production, which, combined with the new facilities, resulted in an increase of cash flows from operating activities before non-cash operating working capital items, lower than the increase in scheduled debt principal payments and free cash flows allocated to non-controlling interest. The increase of the payout ratio is mainly due to the slightly lower free cash flow than in 2016 and by higher dividend payments as a result of a higher number of common shares outstanding. Since the beginning of Q2 2017, our production has been higher than the long-term average, and we are now standing at 105% for the quarter, mostly due to the hydroelectric facilities in Ontario and Quebec. This concludes my review of the result. I'd be happy to answer your question later on during the call, and I'll turn it back to Michelle.
Good morning, everybody. I think that Karine has forgot to mention that we have, as usual, for the 6 months and the year end, we have a webcast presentation that you can find on the Innergex website. So if you're not linked already, that doesn't really matter. We'll follow the presentation, but you can see it back. It will be on the website. So thank you, Jean, for the presentation on the financial resort. I'll start just to keep you apprised with the presentation. It's on page 11. We're talking about operating review for the last 6 months, and we'll make a little bit of a comparison between what we have said for 2017 and what we have accomplished to date this year. And we'll give a little bit of forward-looking for the end of the year at the end of the presentation. So to come back to the operation review, we were happy to put Upper Lillooet in the first quarter, as you remember, and in the second quarter we have put the Boulder facility in BC. That's a 25-megawatt facility. Jean referred to some hiccups during the commissioning or post-commissioning items. Very few hours on Boulder, and Boulder, I would say that now it's fixed. We'll still have to do a little bit of a touch-up on the mechanical aspect on the deflector, but that will be done in the winter time without much loss of revenue. Upper Lillooet was a little bit more complicated. We knew that the river had a lot of sediment in its water. To some degree, we had underestimated the abrasion that can cause on some shaft seals, and we have right now order a new type of shaft seal that should solve the issue, but we will have them only in October. So by this time, we have to change the shaft steel regularly, so hence the downtime, the more frequent downtime on the machine. We're also going to have some intervention in the water intake to minimize the carryover of the sediment in the water intake during the fall. So we're hopeful that these modifications will have the Upper Lillooet being available as was the forecast. So we'll still have to do some work this fall, but very confident that we'll fix the issues. As for Ms. Gigubchuksun, the EMU project in the Gaspé Peninsula, we're referring also some with some adjustment. We had a punch list of items that were done lately. we still do some mechanical adjustment to finalize the work in the substation during the summertime. But the most focused of area is the software for the power curve and also for the blade heating system that is supposed to reduce the downtime for the ice during the winter time, and this has to be tweaked again with our turbine manufacturer Senvion is working on it. As far as lost time and availability, we have contract with them on an availability basis during the year, but we'll know at the end of the year what was the final result. So we expect that we should have some compensation from Senvion at the end of the year based on the availability and since they are operating the facility maintenance, the facility under contract with us, we hope to recover some of the lost time that we have experienced. To come back to to France, we've been busy in the acquisition of some facility in France, so we're very happy on how France is turning out in terms of M&A. Although the wind was regime was a little bit lower than what we had anticipated, we have done some studies and some going back into the wind regime in France to see if it was a problem with the with our own acquisition or our own fleet, and it's not the case. The wind in France is lower these days. We don't have a long-term concern. As you know, we are basing our forecast on 20 years, 25 years historical data. So although 2016 in France is seen as a very low year in terms of wind availability, and the beginning of 2017 was also very low. So I would say that, if we believe in long-term forecast, that those years or months are behind us, and theoretically, if we believe in the law of average, we should see a better wind regime in the near future. We also have, as you know, open an office in France. The team is growing up. We have now about almost 10 people. So it's been a growing small team. It takes a little bit of time to get some good people, but now I think we have good traction, and from that nucleus of people, we can definitely see more M&A activities, joint venture discussion, and also built on our own greenfield pipeline, which we working, as you can remember, we have a little bit over 100 megawatt of our own development, and looking to grow that pipeline with our team now in place. Also very happy to report that we have hired our first full-time employees in the U.S. We are going to open an office in the next few weeks in San Diego. We think that San Diego is a good hub. There's a lot of good people available in renewable energy in this area. So hopefully what we want to do in the U.S. is replicate what we have done in France, mainly starting to have an office, discussing joint venture possibility with players, and many, hopefully do some M&A activities. And also, as we always want to do, is build our own pipeline of development. We believe strongly that the USA will be a growing market past the PTC. We think there's going to be a lot of activities in the next 2-3 years to basically put in place all the project that have secured the PTC before 2020 or 2021. So there's a lot of activities going on. So when you have that type of activities, there's maybe some opportunity to do joint venture, but our view also is based on the long-term thinking that the USA will be a good market with growing activities past the PTC, so hence our desire to start our own greenfield project. So if we turn to page 12, we're showing on the map what our sites are now. So we have 51 projects in operation and 3 projects in France under construction. All those construction should be finalized by the third quarter. So by the end of the year, we should have 54 facility for a little bit more than 1,846 gross megawatt installed by the end of the year. And hopefully we may have some other project adding up by the end of the year. If we look at page 13, we're talking about the outlook. Obviously, for us, as I mentioned, we want to pursue France. We want to make sure that we're growing our activities in France. We're not forgetting Canada. Canada has some interesting opportunities. The small one, if we start with the East, we have participated in the small First Nation call in New Brunswick. We're waiting for the final decision by probably early fall, if not sooner. We have a project with the Mi'kmaq community in New Brunswick. We also have submitted 2 small projects for community participation in New Brunswick in July. We don't expect any news from New Brunswick before the year end or beginning of Q1. So we'll see that. In Quebec, we're advancing in a small project, small hydro and remote community in Inuktitut. That's a little bit early stage, but we're in discussion with Hydro-Quebec to replace diesel in that community, and this project would be a joint venture with the Inuit of Inuktitut. If we go further west, we have been pre-selected with our First Nation partner, the Birdies, on the Yodin project. It's a 100 megawatt project, maybe eventually a little bit more, but for now, we're presenting the project as a 100 megawatt. Very happy to have been pre-selected with our partner, the Birdies. The bids are due next May, so we still have some work to do to make sure that this project will be competitive. And in BC, we're working with small project with some First Nation community in the northwest. We'll have a little bit more news in the future, but it's an interesting redevelopment of an existing project that could be done. So we'll talk about it later when things will be more advanced. Still working, as you know, in Latin America. We're focusing in Peru. We've done a lot of due diligence on small hydro that have existing PPA. It's not easy because obviously some developer are a little bit optimistic on the production and maybe on the construction cost. So still working hard in trying to find the right recipe over there to advance not an existing project, but to have our first project in that area. If we go back to page 14, we're showing what we have set at the beginning of the year in terms of KPI. We said at the beginning of the year that we would raise our total production by 31%, revenue by 44%, adjusted EBITDA by 48%, and free cash flow by 45%. As you heard Jean giving you the numbers for the first 6 months, we're a little bit behind, but that can be explained by the fact that Upper Lillooet and Boulder and the acquisition in France were forecasted to enter in the second quarter, so we didn't have the full benefit of having them in operation during the year, so we're very optimistic that we'll catch up on the projection, given the fact that we have also had some acquisition in France. But so far, we're at the six-month period, we're 11% on the production, 22% on revenue, and 19% on EBITDA. Free cash flow is down 4%. So like Jean said, I think that some explanation was basically driven by the fact that we are below average in production, so that didn't help, and some setback in non-availability of some of our newer facility. But we think that on Q3 and 4, we should catch up most of the retard or the lag behind, and we should get back to the projection for 2017. That translate those numbers were translated in installed capacity. We said at the beginning on page 15 that we would reach 1,683 megawatt by 2017, compared to 2017 where we had 1,533 megawatt. Now, with the acquisition of Les Renardières and Planche Fleury and the other transaction we announced earlier on, we should have 1,846 megawatt by the end of the year, which shows a growth of 10% even from the projection that we had done at the beginning of the year. So I'm glad to report on that and still working to increase those numbers going forward. If we go back to page 16, I know that we're repeating ourselves quite often, but it's important to say what we want to do with the company on the long term. We want to remain exclusively. We want to be 100% renewable energy producer. We want to maintain the diversification of our energy sources. That means that we want to stay involved and try to develop hydro, wind, and solar, and we want to diversify our presence in the international market. As you know, France is our focus, Peru, Latin America, U.S., and obviously Canada is the place where we want to do business. Still always focus on high-quality asset. We want to maintain a low-risk business model, meaning that even if we take risk, we want to be very conservative in our approach and in our forecast. We maintain a long-term outlook. We're not a short-term player. We want to have a sustainable cash flow and a sustainable dividend profile. And we're open to do business with partnership, especially with First Nation and doing joint venture with other players. And we'll be maintaining a discipline of acquisition that are creative to cash flow. I think that when we look into our portfolio, it's important to have a good mix of acquisition, our own development pipeline, and be involved in construction and development. So on those comments, I'll open up the question period.
This completes our presentation. We now invite you to ask your question.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from the line of Rupert Merer of National Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Rupert.
I was wondering if you could start by giving a little more color on the impact of the pre-commissioning downtime you saw at Upper Lillooet. Can you give us a sense of how much downtime you saw in that facility in Q2 and what the expectation is for the remainder of the year, and also what the cost of the fix will be?
Yeah, the cost will not be that important. It's mainly the fact that the shaft seal is basically being ground down by the sand in the water, and what we have to do is basically have about six hours per day being down one machine. We have four machines in operation in Upper Lillooet, so that is actually causing the downtime. For the water intake, we had planned with the contractor, they had to come back to fix the Obermeyer, it's the deflatable where that had to be fixed after some rock had hit the at the beginning of the construction. So that won't be costing us much more. We already have that in the budget of construction to finalize the construction this fall. For the water intake, it'll just be a matter of installing some water pump to make sure that we push the sedimentation towards an exit a little bit faster before it reached the water intake. So it won't be a lot of capital investment. It's just tweaking the water intake, making sure that we draw less sediment in it. And probably a couple of weeks of shutting down late during the fall will also have a little bit of impact on the availability of upper level wet. Boulder was basically down only 5 days after commissioning because we discovered that there were some oil that was leaking through the turbine hub. And we finally saw that there were a depressure behind the wheel that was fixed by simply putting some hole in the cover and bring some air there that reduced this depression. So it was a quick fix. It's just that we had to find a solution, and we were down about 5 days. For MU, it's a little bit of missing the perfect power curve, and it's more of a software issue. And the downtime that we're talking is that they have to come back and fix a problem with the substation that we have to replace some component in the substation. Other than that, there were some mechanical fix on four or five turbines in MU. All little things, but you know, they add up compounded with the low wind regime in France and in Quebec. So it was not actually a very good quarter on that basis. Does that answer most of your question, Roper? Or
yes, and how is Q3 shaping up with those issues, but also is there any impact from the drought and the forest fires in BC?
So far, as we said, there were quite a bit of snow in the mountain range. So actually, July was very good, and even with the downtime of our Upper Lillooet, the BC Hydro is on budget. So the other plant have picked up a little bit more to compensate with the downtime and the downtime on Upper Lillooet. And so far, August also looks pretty good. We're over our budget in most of the site in BC. As far as fire event, so far we have not been touched or affected. Thank you, by the forest fire, but obviously, they can be. We can have some eventually, but the one that are active right now and in the past have not been close to our facility.
Okay, thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you, Rupert.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Ng of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. I just had a few questions on your development efforts in the U.S.
Yeah.
You mentioned that your office will be in San Diego. Can you talk about, I presume California will be one of the states you're targeting developments in, but could you just talk about where you'll be looking to, acquire or develop wind? And is it wind and solar, or are you also looking at hydro opportunities as well, like from an acquisition perspective?
Yeah, we shouldn't be reading too much on the location of San Diego being focused only on California. It just happened that the fellow that we hired was based in San Diego, and there's a good pool of people. And as you know, the U.S. is pretty big, so whenever you're putting your foot in, you're far from another potential market. But obviously, the wind regime in the Midwest and in Texas and all that stuff is very good, so there's definitely some good opportunity over there. And then the solar also is very interesting in that area, but that doesn't mean that we will not be focusing on other potential area. We're looking also in Hawaii. That seems a little bit far away from San Diego, but actually the guys from the Vancouver office have covered Hawaii, and there's some pocket of interesting development in Hawaii. So solar wind will definitely be on the priority, but we would love to do some hydro. I would say that in the past we were not that lucky, because I would say that we were a little bit more conservative on the outlook of the price of electricity in the U.S. I'm still quite conservative on that fact. Obviously, there can be opportunity here and there, and there can be some spike and some very local point of interconnection that are a little bit more favorable. But in general, I think that the price of electricity in the USA will stay fairly stable, maybe going up slightly. But, you know, the U.S. have a lot of natural gas, and solar and wind are becoming more and more competitive. So I think that we should be cautious, and hence we're waiting for the sellers and maybe the buyers to get a little bit more realistic on the future expectation of the power curve in the power prices in the USA, so that we can certainly be interested in acquiring existing hydro facility and maybe rehab them. We love hydro. There's a lot of existing hydro facility in the United States that needs a lot of care and new investment. It's just that we have to find the right timing in terms of future expectation for revenue. Because we know how to operate hydro facility, we know how to fix them. It's just that at one point in time, we have to be comfortable about the future revenue line.
Okay. And then you mentioned that you'll be using a similar strategy that you use in France. So does that mean in the U.S. you'll start off by looking at or focusing on M&A and potentially buying a portfolio that has a small development pipeline before, I guess, more actively pursuing your own organic growth there?
Obviously, if we want to have a quicker result, M&A and joint venture is much quicker in a way. We, like I said, there's a lot of activities these days. You know, there's a lot of developer that wants to speed up their development and take advantage of the PTC. So there's maybe some opportunity. Obviously, it's a competitive landscape. It's not a problem to find a deal. It's a problem to find the good equilibrium between risk and return. As you know, we're very focused on those premises. But sure, it would be quicker if we can do M&A or a joint venture of some sort to speed up the process. And buying a small team with a pipeline could be an alternative. It's just that we need to find the right timing and the right equilibrium between expectation of internal rate of return and risk. So, but if we can find the right equilibrium. The perfect scenario would be do a couple of small acquisition and build up on those and build our own pipeline of greenfield development. That would be the perfect scenario.
Okay. And then just one last question on that. You mentioned that we shouldn't read too much into the geography, but San Diego is also pretty close to Mexico. But I was just wondering whether that could be like a potential, office to focus on Mexico. And I know in the past you have, you know, like you're working on something with the CFE, but I was wondering, are you looking to do more in Mexico as well?
Well, that's a very good observation. That's true that San Diego is very close to Mexico, and it's probably easier to cover and have an active lookout. We do not intend right now to have an office in Mexico, but as you know, we've been on that market for the last couple of years. What we don't like there is the perception of again the formula between risk and return. We couldn't find the right equilibrium there. I think that the market will mature a little bit, and hence we may see some opportunity in Mexico in the future. We've made a very good friend over there. We had some good connection, and who knows what can happen. And you're right, San Diego is not that far from Mexico. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. I'll leave it there.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. A couple of questions. It seems that a lot of the recent growth and maybe near-term prospective growth is going to be in wind. Michelle, broader thinking, how comfortable are you taking your percentage of overall capacity and generation in hydro down as you look at prospective M&A and development opportunities? I presume you want to stay predominantly hydro. Is there a percentage level overall that you would view as a floor for that that portion?
It's hard to establish a floor. What I can say is that we're working hard to find also some development and M&A in hydro. Below 40%, I would feel sorry. But on the other end, if we can find some very good solar project and wind project that makes sense and are producing a good return, if it's the case and if the technology is becoming more and more competitive, of course, developing new hydro in Canada or in the United States, it's difficult. And our very interested activities in Latin America, where I still think that hydro is still competitive in some areas. So we like that fact. We like that there's existing facility also that can be acquired in Latin America in hydro. So we want to have a meaningful percentage of our portfolio in hydro, but we will not be dogmatic about it in terms that if we can find very good growth at a good return with conservative assumption, we'll not let go growth just for the philosophy of having a certain percentage of our portfolio being hydro. But what I can assure you is that we are focusing to still be active in hydro, and I think that we have a know-how also that can be of some sort of a better angle or a hedge compared to other companies when we talk about refurbishing or redeveloping or doing joint venture in building some hydro facilities. So we're focusing our effort also on the development and acquisition of hydro.
Okay. The Yotin project. You mentioned Saskatchewan. What's your economic stake in that project?
Well, it's a little bit like you know that I don't like to talk too much about the structure when we're in a competition. But if you look at what we've done with First Nation in the past, it can give you a little bit of an idea that we can be, imaginative in the capital structure. But usually we would be splitting the common shares and provide some preferred equity to the partner in order to finance his share or finance the equity required for the construction. So usually we are ending up with a financial interest greater than our common equity participation.
Understood. Typical structure. Okay. That's all I had. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of David Quezada of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hello, David.
Hi, thanks. Good morning, guys. My first question on France. You guys have had good success recently on the M&A front. The partnership with Desjardins seems to be working well. I'm just wondering if anything changed there more recently that brought on that success or what the keys to that were.
I think that we've been in France for the last 18 months or so. I think that we're getting known. When you're entering a market, you're chasing first of all so that people know you. And in Canada, obviously, Innergex is known by most of the investment bank and brokers. It was not the case in France. Now, obviously, they've seen that what we can do, and obviously, we have more repeat business. People like BEWA and WPD have appreciated the way we have done business. So, and our presence and being active in the marketplace make it a lot more easier for us to see more deals. And believe me, we see deals. There's a lot of activities in France. So we're not intending to do them all, but we can pick and choose and try to eventually do also some joint venture with a local developer. As you may recall, there's two type of contract we can get in France. The one which is almost a little bit of like a fit contract with an adjusted price every year, but those are limited with about six machine of 3 megawatts. So those cannot be bigger than 18 megawatt with the present law or regulation. But there's also eventually some opportunity to bid into RFP bigger project. And some smaller player in France don't necessarily have this, knowledge or have been active in doing so. And they may be interested in joining force to bid future projects. So this is also an angle that we're working on to speed up the pace of growth in France.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's helpful. And then my only other question, and I apologize if you mentioned this earlier, I'm just wondering if you can give us an update on how the wind regime at your French wind assets has looked so far this quarter.
It's better than the first 6 months. Like I said at the beginning, it's very difficult to forecast the next few months in wind. Sometimes in BC, when there's a lot of snow on the ground on the top of the mountain, there's a little bit of predictability. But in wind, the only thing we can hope is that the wind in France come back to the long-term average. 2016 and 17 so far were one of the worst years on record in the last 20 years in the north part of France. So hopefully those bad months are behind us, and we're still very positive about the long term. With diversification throughout our portfolio, we can certainly sustain some bad quarters in one area. It was just funny to see that even the wind in the first two quarters of in Quebec was also low. The wind now is picking up in Quebec very well in July. So, you know, with the magic of the diversification, we're hoping that things will come back to normal or even better for the part of France.
Well, maybe I can add something. If you look at France in 2016, it's kind of unfortunate that we made the acquisition in early Q2, because Q1 2016 in France was well above average for the wind.
That's true.
We just made the acquisition right after. If we would have made it that early in 2016, our result would have been much better.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That's all I had.
Good.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Jarvi of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Good morning, Mark.
Quick question going back on the Yotin Wind Project. Does participation with a First Nation partnership provide any extra credit in the RFP process there or extra bonus marks?
Yes, it does. It's not necessarily a straight formula, but yes, and so is local content. So it's part of our culture trying to be a partner with community and First Nation. So we're glad to see that Sask Power and the government of Saskatchewan is putting some weight in the having a First Nation participation. So we're counting on the fact that that might help. It's not necessarily the only criteria. Price will certainly be very important. But if this gives give us a little bit of a hedge, we'll try to take advantage of that certainly.
Okay. And then, you know, we've heard from a few different companies on bids and efforts to participate in the Massachusetts Clean Energy RFP. Just wondering what your thoughts are with, I know you've talked about the projects in New Brunswick, you've got other sites in Quebec. You know, what possibility would you be in moving some wind energy down in the U.S. market?
We were caught a little bit off, I wouldn't say off guard, but we definitely now are focusing on our effort to build up some capability of delivering wind project in future RFP. This time we were caught short to some degree. Maybe we thought that wind in Quebec this time until there's still PTC would be a little bit more difficult to be competitive. And also we understood that the U.S. government had a strong preference for having wind or renewable asset being produced in the USA. So that's why we were probably not as aggressive as we should maybe have been. But we'll certainly be ready for any new opportunity to sell energy in the South. We spoke with Hydro-Québec to understand a little bit more what they can do to help firming up the wind energy side. So we're getting prepared to answer future call in that, and you're right, we have plenty of good sites that that can be suitable for further investigation and proposal.
Okay, and then my last sort of point of question is around sort of available liquidity and sort of dry powder for opportunistic acquisitions and development projects. When you're thinking about how much is left on the revolver after the last couple of transactions in France and sort of cash on the balance sheet, you know, how much sort of available, you know, cash and credit facilities do you have, and what kind of other ways would you guys maybe augment that, whether or not that's terming out some borrowing on the credit facility to make sure you're well positioned for some future M&A?
It's a very good question. For a long time, we were very reluctant to grow that facility because we were focused with S&P rating. We are still focused on our rating, obviously. But 2017, as you remember, was a big step forward, a big milestone for us because Upper, MU, and Boulder project were to be commissioned. So that obviously was a focus for S&P, making sure that we were able to deliver these projects. Now that this has been done and the forecast for 2018, we have a lot more free cash flow. We don't see any issue raising the that facility. As you remember, we have a lot of
on leverage.
Meaning that there's no security given on about 13, 14 facility to support that that credit facility. So we could certainly very easily, and we're in discussion with an external bank, a U.S. bank, to add up in our portfolio of or syndication. So we could have $50 million easily, maybe $75 million fairly easily by the year end. So this is the plan, is to raise at least $50 million the that facility. So that would free up something around $130-150 million on the line.
Okay, and then maybe just quick follow-up on sort of sources of capital. You know, obviously with small, modest acquisitions, the DRIP would be a nice little way for you guys to source some of the equity. It seems to have sort of fallen down the last couple of years here, the participation and the proceeds from that. Is there something that you guys can do to sort of maybe re-up the participation and source some equity that way?
It had slowed down because we have stopped giving any discount. And the DRIP is something we can offer, but we had decided to cut the discount on the DRIP, so hence the the reduction in the participation. We still have room also for probably a convertible debenture in our credit approach or balance sheet. And obviously, common shares is the last resort to issue. We think that the price that we're seeing these days is okay, but not super. So we're reluctant to issue equity when we think we still have some room to improve on the equity side. And we don't necessarily have the need for an equity issue, given the fact that we can still use the credit facility and perhaps some convertible debenture.
Okay, appreciate that commentary. Thanks, guys.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from the line of Jeremy Rosenfield of Industrial Alliance. Please go ahead.
Hello, Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. Just a couple of questions. Michel, one thing you had mentioned a couple of times earlier was just on the risk-return profile of some of the possible investments that you could make, and I just wanted to go back on that question or those questions. Are you having more difficulty with the risk side of the risk-return equilibrium, or is it more the return side that hasn't met your criteria for the investment opportunities you're seeing?
That's a tough one to answer. It's but you're right. The risk profile that we perceive sometimes when we're looking at the U.S. market mainly is the power price curve. Some people are more optimistic on the evolution of the electricity price in the United States. Building rehab of facility, that's not where we're seeing big risk. You know, we obviously have to put the construction budget and all that stuff and development risk, but that we're okay with in a sense that we know what to do or what to expect. It's the difficulty of looking forward into the price
of electricity in the future. And I give you just, even if you have a 10 years these days of electricity contract, but most of the transaction these days, if you have a fairly new facility, wind or solar, people now are looking at 30, 35 years discounted cash flow life on these assets. So if you have only a 10 years or 12 years PPA, you still remain to a big portion of your future return is based on the year after, and this is where we're having a trouble. Because, you know, we with you guys, we could say that, well, we're doing 12% return on a project. Well, it depends on the power curve, on the power prices that we're using in the future. So this is the fundamental problem with the seller these days in the U.S. and with some buyers that seems to, you know, be comfortable with seeing electricity prices in the States being more, I guess, stronger or so this is where we're having trouble.
Do you think, just to follow on that, do you think there's an opportunity to diversify away some of that long-term power price risk by building out a portfolio that's more geographically dispersed in the U.S. market so that you're actually in several different power markets that maybe have different fundamentals that could drive them over the long term?
I agree with you, Jeremy. The problem is, as you're saying, is that they're getting organized to basically, there's some pocket of market that are probably driven by growth or lack of ability to get natural gas or distribution. But in the next 20 years, one can think about these pocket being unlocked by either receiving a pipe or by having a distribution line or transportation line built up. So the problem is that you're putting your money for the next 30 years on some assumption that you know that are actual, but these assumptions can be changed by just having a big transmission line. And there's plenty of project that some developer, very serious people, are trying to do in building a big transmission line from the Midwest to deliver into New England or to California these days. I understand completely that it's very difficult to permit in the United States. But in the next 20 years, I'm pretty sure that there will be some of those that are going to be built. One can think that if nuclear plants are not competitive in the next 20 years, it doesn't really matter how many lines you will build. There'll be some market that will lack electricity, and the price might be very interesting. So it's true that there's some area in the U.S. that can be positive in terms of power prices in the future. It's a little bit risky. So we're getting there. We're trying to understand. We're getting having people working for us in the United States. We may have better views and focused like you're saying in some areas where we can feel a little bit more comfortable about future prices, but this is where we're having a little bit of more trouble.
Okay, good, thanks. Maybe just one other question in terms of capital allocation. You were just answering the question, I guess, to Mark on dry powder and where you could get more access to capital. But if I'm thinking about things the other way, and if you have lots of free cash flow starting to build up from the assets that are now in service, how do you think about maybe deploying some of that capital to either repurchase shares or to really increase the dividend to try to offer more of a return to shareholders if you don't see the types of investments and the returns on the investments that you want to make on new projects?
No, it's always a possibility if we think that we cannot deploy our capital and make a decent return. I've said so many times with investors that we think we're in the business of providing a spread on equity versus the 10-year bonds. And historically, we were trying to get, 500, 600, 700 basis point over the 10-year bond. If we can find these type of return with conservative and decent assumption on power prices for the future, I don't have any problem deploying our capital. But if we cannot generate a reasonable spread given the type of risk we're taking, you're right, we can certainly buy back some shares or raise the dividend, especially if the interest rate start to go up a little bit. The nice thing about having a lower payout ratio is that we can adjust the payment on the dividend to keep up on the interest rate moving up. Those are two possibilities, but we're trying to be reasonable and conservative with the use of our equity. But I think that the market in general is I wouldn't say disciplined, but sometimes the market gets to the equilibrium. Sometimes it takes a little bit more time to adjust. Right now, the interest rate we've seen going up a little bit. So eventually, I think that the equity return will readjust itself to make sure that there's a decent spread between the bond and the equity.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for that. That's it for me.
My pleasure.
Ms. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, everyone, for taking part in this conference call and webcast. We look forward to speaking with you at our next results conference call in November. Thanks.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your lines.